Lady Shear in Shar HaBitachon, Sunday, Chof Ches Ir Tovshin Ayin Hay. We're at the beginning of Perek Gimel Shar HaBitachon, Shear number 13. Okay, we start learning Shar HaBitachon, Chavos HaLavos. We've started Perek Gimel. Perek Gimel, we said, is the beginning. Perek Gimel and Dalet are the main prokim of how to acquire the Midah of Bitachon. Paragimel is, theoretically, intellectually, things you have to realize and confirm in your own mind and be convinced that it's true. Five prerequisites, he calls it five hakdamos, in order to become a bitachon. This, each one could take years. It's not an easy thing. And you know, people say, oh, it doesn't work for me, but it's a journey. To become a bitachon is a journey. And there's five prerequisites. The first one is split up into seven, because the first one of the five is to believe that all the things that he said as logic and common sense in Perek Beis would enable you to have bitachon in something are true about Hashem. He gives a different order here. I said last week a suggestion why the order is different. Number one was the same as number one in Perek Beis, which is that Hashem loves you and cares about you more than anybody else, more than your spouse, more than parents, more than a parent to a child. In fact, he says a chiddush, and this is very interesting, that the love that any person experiences in this world is channeled, is Hashem's love, that he channels through these channels, through a parent, through a spouse, through a child, through a parent, through a Rebbe, and all these, there are different types of love, and they're all, Hashem is the source of everything, Hashem is the source of the love. So he throws that in, sort of. He says, Hashem loves you more than anything else, and I want you to know something, that any love you experience is really Hashem's love. And this is a major, major thing. We gave a mashal, a way to help us grasp it and understand it and believe it and see a picture of it is a parent's love for a child. That's probably the closest thing. Even though the relationship of Hashem to Bnei Yisrael is described as a loving parent and also as a loving spouse. And that the loving spouse is really a higher madrega. That's Shir Hashirim. And that's, the Rambam says, that's really the ultimate love. So we don't like to talk about it because it feels uncomfortable. So we'll say a parent, because every parent knows that there's nothing they wouldn't do for their child. Even if they misbehave. So that's an easier way to latch on to it. The first thing is more difficult. You need a very good relationship to achieve that. Okay, number two here is number four in Perek Beis, which is that Hashem knows what's best for us. We're not going to learn. We're going to start the text in number three. Number two is Hashem knows what's best for us, and he elaborates and he explains it more than he does in Perek Beis. He says, look, Hashem created us, and it's the manufacturer of the car that knows what's best for the car. Knows how often it needs, who's going to decide how often it needs a tune-up, and how often you have to replace the starter, and when you have to make an oil change. The manufacturer of the car knows best. So Hashem made us, and therefore he knows what's best for us. And then he says it's really a very bad marshal, because the manufacturer didn't really create the car. Talk about a car, obviously, but the manufacturer just put things together, but the manufacturer can't create anything. So he doesn't really know the kishkas of a car. He knows what he knows because he put together certain things based on his scientific knowledge, on his mechanical knowledge, on his engineering knowledge. But Hashem made us from our very inception, from nothing, from naught. So he really knows what makes us tick and what's best for us. Part of what's best for us is what's best for our neshama and what's best for our nitzchius. And so that's, we have to that, where people are very short-sighted and we want instant gratification, and we want gratification of, that our five senses could relate to. So that's why we have trouble with this. So again, this has to be worked on. Number three here is the same as number three in Perek Beis. Tashlishi Kabori is Baruch Chazak Mikol Chazak, is omnipotent. Udvaro Nigzar Mikol Davar. He says something, that's it. No one can stand in his way. Vein Meisha Vizdino Kmo Shenemar Kol Shechavitz Hashem Asa. V'Amar Kini Advari Asher Yetsi Mipi Lo Yeshuv Alai Veikam Ki Masos Asher Chafati. What Hashem says goes, and there's nothing that could thwart his plan, nothing that could block his plan, slow his plan, speed up his plan. So Hashem can do anything, you know. Hashem can do anything. Hashem can find a solution where you think, well, what this means with Poyel is that he can find a solution where you think a solution is insoluble. That the problem is insoluble, that there is no solution. Now, how am I going to do that? It's not going to work because this and because that. And Hashem could find this, a way to, Hashem could figure out a solution. And they say, oh, wow. So that's number three. And nothing can stop him. So number one is Hashem's love for us. Number two is Hashem knows what's best for us. And number three is Hashem is omnipotent and Hashem can do what he wants. Number four here is number two in Perek Beis. And that is Hashem is constantly aware of our lives. And this is something the Avdei Avodah Zarah struggled with, and that's why they fell into Avodah Zarah, because it was really something that they couldn't comprehend. How something that's Kadosh, 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 and the creator of all, and the reason everything exists can be on top of my petty things, whether I'm baking a cake or I'm crossing the street and I'm going to the store or I need money to give my kid for a trip. Things that would make us giggle. We don't want to admit it, but if we say, oh, Hashem is very aware that I have to come up with the money to be able to send my kid on a trip. So I think people giggle when you say that. Hashem is very aware of who's going to win this baseball game, football game, basketball game. So we giggle. But it's not to giggle. Hashem is everything. Chas v'shalom to think that there's anything beyond his care and concern and game plan. And so what's the difference? Who wins the game? We don't know. Maybe some people bet on it, and therefore the outcome of the game is going to affect their financial resources. Maybe some person's going to feel pain. You know, if the Mets lose, I still feel a jab of pain. So that's a kapor, my averis, that jab of pain. So maybe that's what Hashem's plan is. We don't know. You have to keep in mind something the Rambam says in Shmona Prokim, that sometimes a person can go and build a huge castle, a building, and many centuries can go by, and the whole, and so much work went into it, and the whole purpose is that at some point in time, a worthy person is going to come and rest in its shade. Hashem has no problem with that. You know, there's no cost-benefit analysis by Hashem, because there's no cost. Kihu amar v'yehi, Dvar Hashem, anything materializes when Hashem says so. It doesn't take any more effort for him to, Chas v'shalom, it doesn't take any more effort for him to have me cross the street than it does for him to put up the World Trade Center. Right? No more effort, Chas v'shalom. So, what the Rambam says is only like, wow, you mean it? Only to us, because to us, putting up a building, it's like, it's going to take so many hours of so much manpower, and so much tircha, and so much money, and so much kochos, and so much planning, and so much thought, but to Hashem is nothing. Ki yu amayar v'yehi, hutzuvah v'yamot. So, what's the difference? So there's no cost-benefit analysis. So if a worthy person has to rest in the shade at one point in time, So no problem. That shade will be there because a few centuries ago someone built the building, and this is the purpose of the building. So that's number three here, which is number number four here, which is number two. And Perek Bey, that Hashem is constantly in touch and knows what's going on. And in Perek Bey, he stresses that he doesn't get distracted and is not lazy and doesn't forget things and is not busy with other people that he's taking care of. No such thing. So it's not like Hashem is so busy, he has no time or no cup or no, he's not focused on whether I'm going to make the bus. That's what Chazal said. You can't think like that. Nothing's hidden from him, nothing is forgotten. No matter how big something is, how small something is, nothing, there's nothing that makes him forget other things. He doesn't get busy. You know, but some people don't multitask well. Hashem multitasks very well. Multitasks. So that's a very interesting pasuk. I think maybe I said it last week that the Pashtus HaPasuk is saying that the Tzumel has to punish him, that the Bnei Yisrael are getting punished. And they're complaining that Hashem doesn't care about them anymore. But the Chacham Lvovos is seeing the pasuk as saying that Hashem is not on top of things fully. Chas v'shalom. Nistru atarki mi Hashem. Kaim mishpat yav. V'omar lo yitzatim lo shemat al keil am Hashem borik tzos oriz lo yiv lo yigay chekul esunasam. V'chamishi, number five here is number six in Perek Beis. And that is Hashem has an exclusive. And there's also people grapple with to really internalize it and believe it, that it's no one can do anything to you, harm you, or help you unless Hashem wants. Everything is a tool in Hashem's hands. Everyone's a puppet. No one can help you. Forget about no one can hurt you, which is the next few words. Lola hazika. But no one can help you. No one can do anything unless it's Hashem's will. V'lolu zulaso, ki im b'shus abore yisbarach. Ki however, okay, you have to realize and internalize and be convinced of that there is no other power other than Hashem. And if Hashem wants something to happen, it's going to happen. If he doesn't want it to happen, it's not going to happen. There's no such thing that, well, that person might do it anyway. And this is necessary for bitachon. He's not merely talking about hashkafa here. He's not giving an animam in less. He's saying this is what you need to be convinced of and to realize is true before you can have bitachon, because you're not going to be able to have bitachon unless you realize all of these things. And number five is that no protection is going to help you. No sweet talking is going to help you. Nothing is going to help you. You have to do ishtadlus, which we'll learn about in number seven of these seven things. In number five of the five prerequisites is where he explains his view of what we call ishtadlus. He doesn't call it ishtadlus, rather, but we do, so we'll use that term. In number five of these five things, right? We're learning the first of the five, and the first of the five is split up into seven things. But the fifth of the five is his discussion of ishtadlus. But beyond that, you're not supposed to be worried. It's very hard not to worry. You could be maybe concerned. You could be apprehensive, maybe. I don't know the nuances of the word. But, yes.
It's very difficult to see that it's Hashem if there are people in the way who are.
Yes, it is difficult. That's why this takes work. It takes thinking. As I say, you can't just listen to this class as scintillating as it is and walk out of here and have bitachon. It's not going to work. You have to think about it and turn it over in your mind and really end up asking yourself, you know something? Not you, Hashem. You end up saying, you know something? Like there's no one around and you're just looking in the mirror, so to speak. You know something? I don't really think I believe that, you know? That's my problem. I don't really believe Hashem loves me more than anything else in the world. I don't really believe that no one can harm me if Hashem doesn't want. Because I'm okay with Hashem, but look what this person's doing to me. That's how we think. It's not easy. That's all. But I'm trying to stress that it's not easy. And it's easy to pay lip service to Bitachon. And it's a very, very difficult midah. But at least Chavos is spelling out what it takes. Because if no one would spell out what it takes, then we'd just be tilting at windmills. We'd be flailing our arms in the wind, and we wouldn't be getting anywhere. At least here you have a program. If it takes 3 weeks to think about one of these things, and instead of listening to music, and then you come up with a realization, a shock, that I'm not really convinced of this. Yikes, taka. Then you say, how do I become convinced of it? And not always is there an easy answer, right? Sometimes you have to go back to the Ani Mamins, you have to go back to the 13 Articles of Faith, which everyone swears allegiance to, every believing Jew, every from Jew. But then you say, I want, that, ooh, wow. I didn't realize, sometimes it's the ramification. Like, I believe Hashem Echad. Or it's like, okay, I believe in Shai Yichud. The truth is, the whole Chavos Halvavos is a natural ramification and ripple effect of Shai Yichud. If you learn Shai Yichud with its full scope, so you've already learned that everything is Hashem. So everything else is just totsa'os. It's just, well, then of course no one can hurt you or harm you unless Hashem wants, because all there is Hashem. And of course no one can stop Hashem from doing his plan. Like all these break up into pratim are really all part of Hashem Echad, which is Shai Yichud. That's why Shai Yichud is the base. If you don't, and then suddenly a very, very scary thought, again, please be mindful, I don't mean anyone here, Shalom, but the scary thought is, you know something? I guess my Hashem Echad is not Beseder. So it doesn't mean you believe in a different God, Chas V'Shalom, but you know the Chavos Halavos calls Hanufa. Hanufa means when you cover up people's wrongdoings. Like you give chizuk to giving musar is really more difficult, but you go along with evil. You go along. Maybe passively, which is difficult because you have to be in a position to be able to stop it and a position to give musar, but sometimes actively. Look how many people were involved in Gush Katif, how many people went along in an active way with the evil that was done. Hanufa. It's called Hanufa, according to some, it's a lav. It's covering up, it's giving, telling a Russia, it's okay, you're not so bad, it's okay. It's good. It's good. You're not so bad. So my point is, the Chavos Halavos calls it Shituf Nistar. Nistar means hidden. Shituf means you believe there's another God. You say, what? That's harsh words. What did I do? I'm scared of the guy, So you said, I did good, didn't I? I fired him. Or let's say he did, it was totally wrong. I don't know. Sometimes you could fire someone, I did good. I told him off good. He was Mavayer Summon Barabin. I told him off good. Now you're scared that if you don't say yes, you're next on the list. He's going to embarrass you publicly. So you smile and you go like that. That's Hanufa. It's a lav according to many Rishonim. It's certainly a terrible midah. But what my focus is now at the Chavos Halavos gives it a very harsh name. And that's Shituf Nistar. Shituf means you believe in more than one God, Shituf. And Nistar means it's hidden, it's not obvious, it's subtle. Why? Because if you're, it's like the whole Shari Yichud HaMais is about that. Shari Yichud HaMais is if you do good things for ulterior motives, not because it's Hashem's will. That's already a halbitzara, because at least you're doing good things. Shalom Lishma, okay. I'm not okay, but okay. Hanufa is giving support to evil. Not always, like everything else in Torah, there's halachas when you have to speak up. But certainly it's always usur. Unless maybe, if your life is at stake, maybe, because there's a story in the Gemara where someone killed someone else, and then he turned to the Amora and said, I did good, and he said, yeah. So the Gemara says, why? So he said he would have killed him. So for that Gemara, you're not mechuyav to be moisa nefesh, not to do lo sachnov. But to be fired from a job is not pikuach nefesh. We think it is, but it's not, right? Or else we wouldn't have tainus on anyone that worked on Shabbos, right? In the early 1900s, we say, oh, they worked on Shabbos. Getting fired from a job is not pikuach nefesh. I'm sorry. So chanufa. Anyway, my point is, he calls it shituf. Chavis gets down to the kishkes. And the kishka of a mechanef is shituf. You believe there's another power other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what he's saying here, that you have to internalize the fact that it's not. No one can harm you unless it's Hashem's will. And that's tough, because we live in a world that we think we see cause and effect. We think we see evildoers being successful. People mess up other people all the time. Or it looks like they're messing them up, right? I've gotten messed up in my life, right? It happens to everybody. So you have to realize that it's Hashem. It's not those people. To the degree that that's the Yisalosiko, that's the Chinuch. Why you can't take Nekama? It's tough, it's hard. Maybe it's not tough, but it's hard. And it takes a lot of thinking, and then sometimes you pull up short, and you say, wow, how do I have to, we're like, we believe in Hashem, but when you get down to all the ramifications of believing Hashem, that's what the Chavis HaLavis wants. He doesn't want us to go through life thinking we believe in Hashem. He wants to get into our gut, into our kishkes, so a lot of times people have thoughts and they don't realize the ramifications of those thoughts. So you say, well, according to that, then this is what's gonna end up at the end of the day. You go, whoa, I never meant that. Whoa, but you did mean it. If that's the totsa'ah of what you think. Anyway, so this is not easy, especially because we look at the world and we see things that, this is as stark as someone punches me in the nose and my nose starts bleeding and he breaks my nose. So they say, well, who broke my nose? Well, he did. You could say he did, but you have to understand that he was a tool of Hashem. Why could you take him to Beis Din and ask for money, for damages? Only because the Torah says you could. Just like Hashem will punish the evildoer, because we always have this dichotomy of Paro being punished, even though Hashem said, Va'avodim v'inu osam arba me'oshana. So we have the Zayir and Shemayim, and then I won't go into the total theology of it now at all. It's not the issue now. But we live with this. We believe it. We believe that Hashem's Gezerah is lo kashur, so the person will be punished, just like Paro was punished, just like Hitler will be punished, just like all the Sony Israel will be punished. So the person that punches me in the nose and breaks my nose also will be punished for his bechira, for his choice, and he should consider himself or herself lucky that they have to pay me damages, because maybe that'll be a kapara. If they pay me damages, maybe I'll be mochel them. Maybe they'll be spared a very hot summer in Gehenna. So they should consider themselves lucky. But in other words, there's nothing wrong with following the Torah's permission to pursue things and to be made whole again, to pursue damages. Now the truth is, what happens, they go to Bezdin, let's say, and they don't get, they don't feel they, their concerns were addressed. So they get mad at the Beis Din, and mad at Hashem, and mad at the Torah, and mad at everybody, and mad at everybody. But the truth is, if they would have approached it with the right attitude, then Hashem did it to me. And I'm only taking this fellow to Beis Din because I have permission to, and I don't know that Hashem wants me to not have, you know, Hashem wanted me to have a broken nose, obviously, but how do I know Hashem wanted me to suffer the monetary loss of having a broken nose? I don't know that, and if Hashem provided that I could recover the monetary damage of a broken nose, so like, why shouldn't I pursue it? The Torah said I could, and it's not hashkafically contradictory to this understanding, because Hashem provided for it, and I don't know that Hashem wanted me to have the monetary loss. And I know the person is guilty of doing what he did because he made a bad bechira, and Hashem's going to punish him. But when you, let's say you lose the case, so you don't get as much money as you wanted, so then you wouldn't be angry. If you approached it with the right hashkafa, so then you say, okay, this is what happened, this is also beyond Hashem. Hashem is the one that broke my nose, and I'm allowed to try to recover some monetary damages, and this is what I got, or I didn't get anything at all, but I'm cool with that, because it was never an issue of revenge. When you take someone to Beis Din, you're not seeking revenge. You're seeking, as the Lashon goes, the legal Lashon is to be made whole again, right? And Hashem provided for that, so I can do it. But you're not looking for revenge. You're not looking to rake them through the coals, and to, you're not supposed to be. Lo sikom is still applicable. Like, so you say, even am I allowed to be angry? I don't know, I can't answer. I don't know, it's a tough question. Yeah, you wanted to hear something?
Well, see, to me, the problem is, it's like a dichotomy, it's like a catch-22. If you believe it comes from Hashem, but it's something that's very painful, like people being axed, murdered in Har Nof, then it's hard to believe Hashem loves you and he's only good. If you don't believe it's Hashem, then you could say Hashem is good and the people are evil. But when something really bad happens...
So you're going back to number one, really.
Right,
so it has nothing to do with what we're learning now. So again, I gave you the marshal of a parent. And the child is totally convinced that his mother hates him, and she put him to sleep at 6:30, and she took away his candy from him, and he can't go on the school trip, and he can't sleep over by his best friend. I hate you, mommy, because you hate me. And this is what we hear, you know. So that's what we're doing to Hashem, you know. Except it's on a larger scale, and we don't know. You know? So, well, that's all. Just keep thinking of the marshal. That's the only eights I have. It's true. Maybe it helps to learn. It helps to learn Eov with Perushim. It helps to learn what we're going to be learning soon in Shar HaBitochen and the Chayvus HaLavos, White Tzadik V'Ralo. Right? It helps to read Rabbi Kersner's book, Making Sense of Suffering. Maybe Lisa Aiken also wrote a book, Why Me? Something like that.
Yeah.
Why? Something like that. These are all very good books, and they're very helpful. And you have to learn and study and think and contemplate. It's not shitchias. It's not superficial. I'm not calling it superficial. It's adarav. It's very deep. But that's our nisayon. That's how we have to deal with it. Because we'd be foolish not to. Because the reality is that it is Hashem. And the reality is that Hashem is only a mative. And we might as well hook into the reality. If it takes work and it's deep, so life is not simple. You know, you're not supposed to go through life. This is especially the Chayvus HaLavos should give us chizuk, because we're living in an age, supposedly, of rationality, right? So Chayvus HaLavos is fine. You know, adarabba, think, study, work it out, go deeper into it. But you can't, a person can't just sit there and say, I don't get it. So go study. There's plenty of svarim. Plenty of svarim on Tzadik V'Ralo, plenty of Chayvus HaLavos. The Chayvus HaLavos himself, where he segues into it. He doesn't even talk about it. He just like throws it in as a sidebar in the middle of talking about something else. We're about to learn it. He'll start talking all of a sudden at the end of Perek Gimel. He starts talking about Tzadik V'Ralo. It's like it's not even on topic. He just goes off on a tangent. I think Rabbi Kurzman's book is, Rosenblum wrote it, Jonathan Rosenblum, he transcribed the tapes. I think the tapes are super duper powerful because, you know, he gave these shiurim after he discovered he had a terminal illness. That's when he gave these shiurim, which is, and it's phenomenal. The book is phenomenal, and if you get a chance to get the tapes and listen to the tapes, they're even more phenomenal.
You can download them. He has a website. You can download everything for $3 a piece.
Yeah, yeah. So that's just what I gained a lot out of that book. I read the book. I didn't listen to the tapes. I read the book. But I know I listened to some of the tapes to know that it's even more powerful. The book is a transcription of the tapes. That helps. It helps. I mean, that helps. Learning Eov helps. Malbim, you know, you have to learn, study. These things are deep. It's like a child says, you know, I don't get how to build a bridge. I just don't get it. Yeah, you're in fourth grade, you know. When you get your doctorate in engineering, then you'll understand how to build a bridge. So then we're children. So that's number five, right. That's number six in Perek Beis. Now he's explaining how it gets into Bitachon. He says, why can't I believe that why can't I rely on Hashem? And Chas V'Shalom, there's another power. He says it's not conceptual. He says it's not conceptually possible. Ki ha'eved che'yil o yoso me'od on echad v'yeh kol echad mehem yochol ha'wilo. You say, okay, Hashem, I need this job. I really need it, you know. And if you won't give it to me, well, maybe I'll make a good impression anyway. Maybe I'll use my protection. It means you're not really, you can't rely on Hashem. If you have a plan B, the reliance on Hashem to be called bitachon, the way it's supposed to be had, has to be total. Whenever you have a plan B, you're not having bitachon. That means there's no plan A. Your plan A is flawed. Plan A is Hashem, plan B is protection. And maybe we don't want to say those words, but that's what we mentally do that. You know, I'll daven, you know, but just in case that won't work, so I'll. So you're not really relying on Hashem. That's the point he wants to make. Your bitachon is flawed because a person could think, well, I'm relying on Hashem, but, you know, just in case Hashem doesn't want to help me, because I did Averis. So I'll try a different way. You know, I don't know if we even mentally verbalize those words, but we sort of act that way. So he says he wants to make a point here. It's a deep point. It means your bitachon in Hashem is not full. It's not that, I have bitachon and then I have a problem. I have a theological problem. I have a bad thought. He says your bitachon is not true. When you have a plan B, it means you're not fully relying on plan A. I heard a tremendous word from Shrage, when he was in jail. So he said this, he told me a beautiful word. We were talking about different trials, different ishtablusin to get him out, different times. Again, he got out with less time than he was supposed to serve. But he told me this beautiful word. It says that the Bnei Yisrael, like a certain amount of people died every year on Tisha B'Av. They dug their graves and they got into their graves, and a certain amount of people died every year. He said, and the last year, that last group didn't die. That's what the Midrash says. That last group didn't die. So he says, either he said it or he said it b'shem his then roommate, Papi, the guy that they put in jail for killing Arabs. Papi, nobody knows who I'm talking about. These people were famous. You know, it's really 10 years ago, 12 years ago. Papi, the guy in Hanov adopted his children. They put him away because he killed Arabs in revenge. Revenge or whatever. They do that to you here in this Medina. So, he said, because everybody, when they died, let's assume they died every year that they shouldn't die. But they always had a plan B. Maybe I'll die next year. Maybe I'll live. Who said it's my turn to die? But the last people, they had nowhere to go. This is their year to die.
Oh, right.
So when they davened, they said, like, I have no other hope but you, Hashem, because this is the year I'm supposed to die. So their tefillos worked, and they didn't die. A beautiful word. Great thought. It's a beautiful thought. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's a very beautiful thought. Because it's true. It's a true, I don't know if it's true about what happened there, but it's certainly true. And that's what the Chavis is saying here. When you have a plan B, you're not having bitachon. When you have another Eitzah, this is, you see, the chiddush of this is, we think, even when you get to the Madrega that no one can hurt me if it's not Hashem's will, you have to realize no one can help you either if it's not Hashem's will. It's not like, well, Hashem would help you, and since that other person is going to help you, so Hashem is willing to just, you know, take a break and let that person help you. No one can help you if it's not Hashem's will. Lo nuchal daber elecha ra o tov, Lavan of Esau said. We can't even talk tov to you. We're completely controlled by Hashem. So that's what he says. If two people can help me, so I can't, I'm not relying fully on any one of them because I have a plan B. So let's say I have two people who can help me. I'm giving you the marshal. And one can help me more than the other. So then I'll rely on that one more. Moshe Kosum, Loma Tamaria. Shinemar, Yechozek, Bitchono Bok, Fiacholto. It's like a sliding scale. The more he can help me, the more I'll trust, I'll rely on him. Avapishu Batech Bisherusum. No Yuchol Oilo Laziko Ki Mechel Membavad. It's only when only one of them could help me or hurt me, then I'll Korchach Yivtachol of Levado. So, I have to go along with the reality, and that's the only one I could rely on. There's no one else I can rely on to help me. So there's only Hashem. So that's number five. If a person feels you'll stop pinning your hopes on other people, or your fears from other people. Now there's nothing wrong with, in other words, again, normal hishtablus will be, you're going to your boss for a raise, so you don't say, I'm doing a lousy job, but I want a raise anyway. Because if Hashem wants me to have a raise, he's going to give me a raise. That's not a good idea. There's still, not because, only because it's a lack of hishtablus, right? And if you want a favor from someone, if you're in tune with Shar HaBitachon, and you realize that you really want a favor from Hashem, and you want, but this is the person that seems to be the channel, seems to be, Hashem has many ways to get you that favor that you need, but this person seems to be the channel. So you're going to put most of your emphasis on davening, most of your emphasis on tehillim, most of your emphasis on bitachon, and then you're going to do your proper hishtadlus, because the Chavis Lavovus says, again, we'll learn it at the end of this parak, there's an obligation to do hishtadlus, which is creating the channel through which Hashem will send his Yeshua, or will send anything that you want him to send. He'll send it through the channels, and our Hishtablus creates those channels. He says, ever since after Sheshishimei Gracious, there were no channels. Vayomer Elokim Yihyor, Vayihyor. Vayomer Elokim Yirot Kia, Kia. Hashem said, Eitzim, pop. Everything popped up. Or evolutionized. But there was no Hishtablus. Then he says, if the sheishes you made gracious, then a person has, it doesn't happen anymore. Nothing just happens. Everything now is brought about by a chain of events. And we are supposed to be part of that chain. Now Hashem is not tied to any particular chain, right? Habi shluchim lamakom, he can do it in many ways. But his status is being part of that chain, creating the channels through which Hashem will send to us what he wants to send to us. So this doesn't mean you can ignore and not, you know, be oblivious to other people that you need something from, because as long as you're healthy, you have a healthy understanding that it's not them that's granting it to you, and it's not their favor that you're trying to win. You're only doing with them, it's exactly, you know, you're doing with them what Heshtablus calls for, you know. You're not gonna antagonize someone and then ask them for a loan. That would be below the bar of Heshtablus. Not because it's not possible, right? If Hashem wants to, right? It can happen too, but that's under normal circumstances. But the realization that under normal circumstances that's the Heshtablus. But you have to realize it's only Heshtablus. That means if the person says no, you wanted a loan from him, it means you're not gonna get angry at him, because Hashem said no, not him. See, that's where we see if you're really there. If you get angry and resentful or depressed or upset or resentful, or you become dysfunctional, or you get a little depressed, you get angry at the person that didn't do you the favor, that's where the test is. Because you wouldn't get angry at them. Because you would understand what the real source is. And you won't overdo your Heshtablus, which is of course the greatest sakana of Heshtablus, is that we go way, way overboard. And it's doubly hard, triply hard, unaccountably hard, because there's no solid objective line of Heshtablus. You can't point to it. Like I can point to how much flour you're making into dough, and this is take challah without, no challah, challah without a bracha, challah with a bracha. You can measure in a measuring cup and everybody goes home happy, right? Right? But if you tell a person Heshtablus, then he says, how much? How much Heshtablus is Heshtablus, and how much is over the line? And there is no answer. You have to look into your heart, and you have to be able to be introspective, and you have to feel when you're starting to place too much reliance on the channel, not on Hashem. If I really believe that Hashem is the one giving me this, and all I'm doing is the Heshtablus to create the channel, would I, and then you fill in the blank, would I spend so much time on it? Would I plead with him so much? Sometimes that is the Heshtablus, to plead. There's no Shulchan Aruch, Hilchas Heshtablus. If you have the right attitude, the right Hashkafa about Bitachon, and you have the right attitude and hashkafa about Heshtablus, which Mr. Shemuel learned again, the Perigimel, then you will paskin, you will write your own rule book. Because I guarantee you that you'll feel this is wrong, this is too much, I stepped over the line. Now, there is no line. People, whether with shidduchim, with jobs, with friends, with shidduchim, right? Is there a point? There's no point where you stop your Heshtablus. You know, it's all Heshtablus. But one rule—that's what Perek Hay is all about. How can you tell when you're not having bitachon? How can you tell? It's a beautiful Perek. He gives you, like, take this test. You go on the internet, take this test, and it's a self-test to see if you're having bitachon or not. Do you get angry? Do you get sad? Do you get depressed? Are you a cheerful person? Are you an optimistic person? Do you want to kill someone when he does an offer to you? And he has like seven questions to ask yourself, and that's how you can tell, because it's just, we all want to know. Like, am I fooling myself? Is this Heshtablus? Maybe it's too much. Maybe it's too little. A lot of people substitute bitachon for laziness. They're lazy, and they don't want to, let's say a person in a certain business doesn't want to keep up with the business. You know, there's always new advances in the business. You have to keep up. There's always journals coming out. You know, every 6 months there's a new journal with the latest advances in any field. And the person, well, let me keep up with it. He says, I have to be tough. I don't be tough, you're lazy. You're lazy. And, right? And that's, yeah, it's tough. I'm sorry, it's tough. No, so we'll stop here. I never promised you a rose garden. Okay.